NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss the NBA playoffs. What else would it be? The basketball bubble. We got a lot to talk about. We have an off night tonight. Only one game yesterday, only one game on Saturday, so that means the playoff field is thinning. And we have three out of the four now. Conference final opponents, I guess you could say. Miami, Boston, we're going to break that preview and predict that series, the Eastern Conference Finals, which I'm really excited about. We'll kind of clean up game 6 and 7, talk about that Boston-Toronto series just for a little bit before we get into that Miami and Boston series, which I think is just wide open. It starts tomorrow night, game 1. But we're going to start the show talking Clippers and Nuggets, talk about yesterday's game, talk about the last couple, 5 and 6, really. Talk about these Nugget comebacks. Talk about where the hell has Lou Williams been. What the hell's going on? Predict game 7 and whatnot. And then we'll kind of discuss, some of the Lakers stuff. They obviously advanced. They did some maneuvering with their starting lineup, with Morris in the starting lineup. Rondo's playing good as a defensive unit. They're playing phenomenal. And then we'll close the show with Houston in Milwaukee, which obviously Houston and Milwaukee have some off-season decisions, or not even decision, just hope that Giannis comes back for free agency and whatnot. So we'll talk about that. I'm really looking forward to the game tomorrow night. Well, both games tomorrow night. Kind of surprised, though, that, it's a game 7 with the Clippers. They've had these. It's one thing just to have a tight game the whole time, right? That's different, Let's say 12 different lead changes, bunch of different ties. If it's a tight game, I get that. But when you're up more than just double digits, I mean, you're up deep into the third, up by 15 or whatever, and you're giving up games. That's cause for concern. A lot of people were just kind of handing over the trophy to the Clippers or Lakers. And really all the way down the line for the year, it just seemed like a lot of experts were just handing it to the Clippers. And I get it. They're a damn good team. They're not playing their best right now, that's for sure. And they did have, some lineups get messed up with Lou Williams out, with Harrell and stuff like that. But they got their squad now. And there's really no excuse now. I mean, we could sit there and say, well, Rondo just got back, for the Lakers and whatnot. So we've talked about Avery Bradley and having that 3-and-D and whatnot. But we're going to get into it in just a second. If this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoveradio. However, you don't have to go to blogtalkropeadoveradio to download the show or listen to the browser. You can find this NBA podcast under the Ropeadope Radio podcast at Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, really all across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. What the hell is going on with my internet? Weird. Okay, there we go. Sorry. One more thing, though. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, oh, there it goes again. What the heck? You can hear me okay, though, right? Yeah, I think you can. Okay. Weird. That was just weird. Yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to mess this up, but anyway, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you've cut the cord, you're not happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. That's live streaming cable. They do have the 7-day free trial. Once you sign up, there's no annual contract. The plans start as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And right now, if you sign up, you get 30-day free trial of HBO Max. Here's another layer. If you sign up for the AT&T TV Now Max package, that already includes HBO Max, plus a free month of Showtime, which is normally $11 a month. That's AT&T TV now. Okay, so I don't know what happened. The internet just kind of dropped on me, but obviously not dropped all the way out. Otherwise, we wouldn't be speaking right now. Well, we'd be speaking right now. I would have had to have called you back is what would happen there. But overall, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall and see how he's doing. And we're going to start breaking down this Clippers Nugget stuff. Game 5, Game 6. Obviously, we're going to predict Game 7. The Nuggets with all these crazy comebacks and games set, like these seven-game series, we'll give you a bunch of different stats on this. But first and foremost, how are you doing there, sir?
I'm having a nice day. School was good. Kids were back in session. Everyone had a mask on, had to wipe down the tables every time after every class. So everything was smooth. Kids were all pretty quiet for the first days. So no complaints at all for day one. And it's kind of an off day for sports, too. Like, it's just kind of a chill day. We obviously got baseball. I'll be sweating bullets. My Vegas team's got to win a hockey game. They're on the brink of elimination. But a little bit of a quieter night in NBA. But that's okay, because tomorrow in NBA, Chris, we're getting spoiled again with some Game 7s that we weren't sure we were going to have after the last podcast. Last podcast, we thought that, well, hell, I predicted the Clippers and Lakers would both win in six, and that was 0-2. and I also did not think that the Celtics would lose their game six. So I guess I'm 0-3. So shit, I've been offering some pretty bad picks. I guess we need to get to college football crappy pick of the week time, where we hit our best at 70%. But yeah, life's not too bad. I mean, NFL is back. The sports world keeps giving, and we got the U.S. Open this week. I mean, it's a beautiful time of the year. And as you mentioned, we're getting down to less and less people. I will say one kind of side note from the podcast. I'll throw it back to you. The last podcast, I started talking about how maybe my biggest issue with Adam Silver during this whole coronavirus time, and like his biggest knock was, okay, so you let players bring in families and kids and wives and all that, right, or friends or whatever. But then Malone for the Nuggets as a coach is like, what the hell? Like, why can't I bring in my wife and kids? Obviously, again, a coach puts in just as much time and effort as a player does, or even more, maybe sometimes in the amount of time for film.
Yeah. And I mean, effort is a loosely worded there. Sitting down, eating chips, watching film is a little different, but keep going.
Yeah. So then, of course, after I said that on the podcast, an hour later, Silver says coaches are allowed to bring in family or wife or whatever for the final four. So even my biggest slight with Silver, because I think he's handled this whole pandemic about as good as an president can, commissioner can, he makes the adjustment to it again. So again, round of applause to that guy. Obviously, I think people have been taking the testing seriously. The players have been following rules, besides a guy for Houston. But, I mean, everything has been done really well, thankful to the leadership.
And he then, kept, you know, it he makes... in the bubble, though, dude. I mean, at least he kept it in the bubble. He kept it in the house, not to, you know, not to, to play off the words there with Daniel House. But the person was there. I mean, that was the person that administered the test. So, obviously, they got a clean health bill. I mean, doesn't that count for something, Marshall?
I'd like to know. I'd like to know what the wife and those three adorable kids of his are going to say when he walks back home. That would be a
I'm sure that part.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yep. You can't get suspended for adultery. I mean, come on.
No, he can sleep on the couch or be booted out the house for a while. So overall, props to Silver. Like you said, we get an unexpected, I would say, game seven. And I know that's kind of where we're going to start. Like, what has been going on? Like, we're having a game seven, which I love as a sports fan. We've had a couple so far. The Nuggets were actually in the first one. But this really, I don't believe, was supposed to happen, Chris. We were talking up the Clippers, and even on last podcast, to give us credit, you know, I talked about how they don't quite seem like they've been, like, their A-plus game. Like, there's been on and off moments, but even with those on and off moments, they were still up 3-1 in the series. And you're thinking, okay, like, they've not been 100%. maybe they're waiting for the Lakers. Maybe like they're having some a little bit of issues. I know Beverly was on and out for a while. You know, Lou Williams kind of takes some shots every once in a while in some games more than others. And Kawhi had had a couple of off fourth quarters. But looking back now, if you're a Clippers fan and you happen to lose tomorrow, you have to look back as a fan and be pissed off because you've now blown a 16-point lead and a 19-point lead to a Nuggets team.
Not on a, you know, four games and six nights on a back-to-back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Michael Porter, and again, I know people gave him shit for it, but what he said was true. He basically said the Nuggets offense, we got a pretty boring offense. All we do is give the ball to Jokic and Murray, and that's it. And he was telling the truth. So how are you blowing a 16 to 19 point lead, Chris, when you're playing against a team who is pretty simple to defend because you know their game plan? What the hell is going on for Clipperland? If you're a Clippers fan, you got to be pretty damn nervous after you're probably getting ready to lick your chops and start talking mess to the Laker fans.
Yeah, I mean, simple. It's definitely not simple, though. Well, you know someone's game plan. Well, we know the game plan of the Lakers, too. We know the game plan, but I don't know about you. It's simple, but yes, well, of course.
Tongue in cheek, sure, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, you know me. I like the details. I like to just... But, I mean, you're right. It's like you're up. Okay, so I'm looking at the score in game five, 42-29, 7 minutes left. Clippers are in the second quarter. Clippers are just dominating game five, right? Of course, fourth quarter run, Denver, you know, all of a sudden they fucking catch up. And they get their first lead at 89-88 of the whole game. So that just tells you. They were just Denver. I'll say this. We gotta rip the Clippers, which we will. But Denver was on fire on both sides of the ball. Even if Joker late in the game had like a bad turnover, he'd turn around and get a block. You know what I mean? Another thing is the Clippers missed a few open shots down the stretch. And if you look at that fourth quarter, with a handful of minutes left in that quarter, they were up 21-11. Porter hitting threes. Clippers stayed within range, clearly. There's just no doubt about that. They actually they had a chance to win the game, but Denver just closed so much stronger, man. It was pretty telling. But when you look at it, dude, here it is. Okay, so it's with 8:27 left. They're up 72-55, dude. I mean, that should be game. And I'm talking about game six. And I'm looking up at the score at this time, and it was 111-96, like 6-7 minutes later. I don't know what's going on all the way, but Lou Williams, over the last seven games, averaging 9 points, shooting 34% from the field. Horrible from the three. I don't even want to mention what he's shooting from three. Oh, of course I will. Not good. No, it's really bad. He's only playing 24 minutes off the bench, which, you know, you'd at least see at least him in the third, or not at least, but in the 30s usually. If you look at the Clippers now, the largest blown leads with a chance to clinch the conference final conference final appearance since 1997 is the stat. 2020. Clippers 19-16. The Nuggets did it last year against the Blazers by 17. I remember them storming, back like that. But you know, it almost felt like I said, a lot of experts were just handing over a championship just because the Lakers weren't a top five 3-point shooting because of their offense. It can get stale as well, but when you got AD. You know, and LeBron, it may look stale at times, but when they got their 1-2 game going, they only need production in one way from a guy. You do this, you do that, you do this. I don't know, man. I mean, we could sit there. I mean, Beverly's struggling majorly, no doubt about it. But look at this. The Nuggets force. Here's this ESPN stat information. The Nuggets force game seven again. It's the first team in NBA history to play a game seven in four straight series. And since ESPN started coming up with the play-by-play where, you know, you can do it on, you know, on their website, First team, that was 1997. First team with three 15-point comebacks facing elimination in, you know, elimination games. And then fifth team to win five elimination games in a single postseason. So we can sit there and rip, you know, the Clippers, no doubt about it, because we have to. But they're just not getting a lot of production. But, I mean, the Nuggets are crazy. Just off of in the last game, the Jokic and Murray and Millsap put up 65, 28, and 13. I mean, the Joker is just Mr. All-Purpose in this series like he normally is anyway. But, yeah, when you look at, like, look at the stat line, 111-98 from the last game yesterday. 33 points for George. He got to the line 11 times. 25 and 5 assists with 8 rebounds. 3 threes by Leonard. Looked pretty good. The other numbers, 5, 2, 2, 0, 0, 5, 0. I mean, sure, one of those, you know, a couple of those people, zeros just got in the game at the end. But I don't know. I mean, it's not – Where'd the defense go for the Clippers? I mean, you gave up 54% shooting from the field. 54% and 48, not that bad. 48% from the three, 12 of 25. I don't know, man. I mean, it seems like offense and defense, they just can't figure it out, Marshall, right now. And anything can happen in a game six, as we know. Both teams have experience. Clearly, Leonard and George have a little more experience. Well, George has – both of them have way more experience in the playoffs. But Leonard has the positive experience, I guess was my point, whereas George, he was going up against LeBron at the time too. So we got to, you know, factor that in at Miami. But, I mean, they need help. Green played okay, but Harrell, ever since he got back in the bubble, he's had, like, one or two good games. Zubik playing 30 minutes, 1-6, did get 12 boards, but didn't do a whole lot offensively, defensively. They're just out of sorts, man.
Yeah, and I guess this is an excuse, but my best guess is that maybe they're just one of those teams that's just struggling in the bubble. Like, to kind of, you know, just to quickly correlate it to hockey, like some teams, like a lot of people said the Islanders have done good because they're a younger team, not many wives, not many families, like they've kind of enjoyed it. But I know, like, the Dallas Stars head coach said he's hated it and he's been miserable because he's just bored there. Yet the Vegas coach says he loves it because he gets to watch hockey and drink beer all the time, you know, for free. So I think in either bubble, I do think that there are some people probably enjoying this and some people probably saying, God, I'm tired of this shit. And not that these guys don't want to win a championship. I'm sure they massively do. But my best guess for what we've seen from the Clippers is that maybe this is just a team who's just not mentally strong enough for the bubble. Because I don't think the skill level's gone away. If you do remember when we had the NBA stoppage for the Wisconsin shooting, the Clippers were one of the two teams with the Lakers that said, hey, we'll quit right now. Like, let's make this a social justice movement. They said they would step out the playoffs. So I just, again, there's so much talent. You have a veteran coach. Maybe it is the mental thing of just the grind. And, you know, I think it was Lowry or one of the Raptors said, thank God I'm out the effing bubble. Like, you know, I think these guys want to win. Obviously, that's why they're there. That's why they're getting their paychecks. But maybe, at least to my mind, maybe that's a possibility, explain their struggles. Because, as you mentioned, this is a team who has the many capable stars. And I don't see it's not like the skill level should just disappear. And, again, you have a lot of veteran guys. This isn't even like this isn't the young rookie team that does know how to win. So that's my first guess. And again, I don't really care. I'm not a Clippers fan, but that's what comes to my mind. And if that is the case, I guess you just got to suck it up because I'm sure the other teams are probably bored as hell wanting to go home too. But, you know, do you want to go home as a Clipper player who lost to the Nuggets in 7 and blew a series? Or do you still want to spend another month or less in the bubble and win a damn ring? You know, it sounds like an excuse. Maybe that's something. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're just playing like shit. But that's what kind of jumps out to me, because the numbers you mentioned, Chris, with that much of a lead, I wish I could have bet the game live to take the Nuggets at that point, because that would have been a really nice live game payout. And for Lou Williams, I gave the guy a ton of credit, because there was moments in that Mavericks series where he was going shot for shot with Luka, or even being the predominant player on the court. Because in that Mavericks series, Paul George, for the most part, wasn't that great. Kawhi is going to be his kind of quiet self, but there were some runs there in that series where, like, Lou Williams was untouchable. And now he's gotten cold, and it just it baffles me. But maybe there's some mental struggles. That's my best guess, because the skill level, it's so much there. It's really hard to believe that they've happened to blow some big leads compared to if Denver had just played lights out and, you know, won a close game. Sure. But yeah, the 15 right. and 17 points, man, that's it's hard to fathom. It'd be frustrating as a Clippers fan. Again, I don't give a crap, but. I don't know. Maybe my idea is crazy too. Maybe the guys are just in a funk, or maybe we're not giving Denver enough credit as they deserve.
I think the credit for Denver has to be there. You know,
true.
No
You're
doubt.
Right. You're right.
But and I'm not. I think I'm with you on the bubble. I just don't know if it's just that. Although there's 15 players and probably about eight or nine that count. So yeah. Maybe one. Or two of those players are having problems, and maybe that's spread, and that could be. Also, just with the bubble, is the fact that game five, you know, you'd have your home crowd going freaking out. And we've seen that. We're not going to put a percentage, you know, point on how much of a difference does the bubble make. 12%, 36.3%, you know, we're not going to do this ESPN analytics thing. But it has to do something. It has to do something. And the game five, maybe that little extra spark would have been enough. Obviously, it wouldn't have mattered in game six because, you know, they were back. And I did – the only thing I said about both series with in the West was I felt that one of them – both of them had a great shot if this was the normal playoffs outside the bubble, home court, whatever, that both of them had a chance to win game four. I really thought that. But the funny thing is, we're in game seven, and that didn't happen. So I'm wrong, too, even though I called it to extend one of them. Yeah, it doesn't really matter because it's not how it happened. One thing that Doc Rivers did point out, beyond just defense, they are not playing. Considering who's on the floor for them, like you said, talent offensively, yes, but especially defense. You know, he's talking about, well, they shot almost 60% in the second half. And fouls for their guards, foul issues. Beverly, I mean, in game six, he played 18 minutes. Playoff P, otherwise known as Paul George. He gets some foul problems pretty early, too. And it wasn't just the last game. So I think foul problems have something to do with that. And that's just focus. That's just, you know, being responsible of like, okay, you know how – maybe a certain ref is calling a game, you have to adjust. We've seen that time and time again, and that's what it's all about. And Rivers said there's really no secret to the collapse, as he's quoted here. It's just we're not living up to it. There's just no excuse. But, you know, obviously, you know, not having Beverly or George or having them play, it's not even just not having them. It's having them play tentatively. Obviously, you don't want to have that. What's your feeling here? Game seven tomorrow, dude. Can the Nuggets do it? Can they pull this? You know, it's still an upset. I mean, the Clippers are favored by 7.5 for game seven. Do you think that's wild? Or do you think that they're just going to kind of, you know, find their groove and go at it? And once again, just like we talked on the last show, I love me some Kawhi Leonard, but man, he's had some rough games too. Not many of them, but it's just funny how the difference between him and LeBron and what that gets. But that's just adds up in general. But what's your thought on game seven, man?
Yeah. Okay. So as a fan, I want to see the Clippers lose just because I think it'd be a great story. And I'm not a Clippers guy, whatever. That'd be fine. Seeing Doc Rivers struggle again. Cool. If I had to bet it, though, I would bet Clippers. I hope Nuggets win. If you remember the Nuggets and the Jazz game seven, those guys were dead dog tired. Like the second half of that game, shooting was like just brick after brick. Those teams, I think the Nuggets scored like 25 points in the second half and won. And I mean, and they had almost had like 50 at half. So the legs really gave out and tired. And I think if you're just looking just simply who can make the last play at the end of the game, like I still think from a betting standpoint, you'd have to favor that Kawhi and Lou can get it done. So I'm hoping the Nuggets pull it off, but I would bet Clippers just because if both these teams get tired, I would like the superior skill of the Clippers to get it done. And Kawhi does some stuff like he normally does when he takes over a game. So I'll go there.
Yeah, I think the Clippers will win too. And my only thing about Kawhi was the fourth quarters, not the overall game. Just to clean that up, because I know people will jump on that. Oh my God, just calm down. Take a couple deep breaths. I was just pointing out a fact. So I'm with you, though. I think the Clippers will win. I wouldn't doubt if it's a tight-ass game. I also wouldn't doubt if sometime in the third quarter they just take over and run away with it. And this time, you know, keep their foot on the neck of the Nuggets. Matchup wise, who has a, now that we're here, who has a better shot of beating the Lakers though? I mean, the Joker would at least, you know, they have a bunch of bigs they could throw at him, but at some point Davis would probably have to go against them. Now that works the other way, because at some point Joker may have to guard Davis, you know, and that may take something out of him. We both feel confident about the Lakers winning just because of this, but now that we're here, who matches up better, even though we thought it was the Clippers at the beginning of the bubble or at the beginning of the year?
I think the Lakers have the better top two, and I think the Nuggets have the better bench or role players. Like, I think Monte Morris and Michael Porter Jr. and Gary Harris are like, I think everyone on paper would want to see the Lakers Clippers, but I think just from a basketball standpoint, if Jokic and Murray could keep up with LeBron and AD or try to anyways, I do think that the other players involved would be a Nuggets advantage. So I think that if you're a Laker fan, hell, you might want the Clippers. They've not been in the right zone. They've played a lot of games. Yeah, I'm going to lean towards that Lakers would want Clippers, and you'd be taking a team who's not quite found the rhythm yet compared to what the Lakers have done, which has been more steady, consistent plays. So, yeah, I would favor wanting the Clippers.
And I would still favor the Nuggets, but if I was a Lakers fan. I think the biggest thing, them inserting Morris in the starting lineup, I don't know if they'll do that full-time now, but I think it makes them quicker. He can also hit a three, so then your starting lineup's a little bit better that way. And then Rondo, great play off the bench or just basically in the starting lineup, to be honest with you. 12.7 assists, he's looked great. Now on to, we are going to preview and predict Miami against Boston. This is a great series on paper. Let's really quick go through, and I don't know why I said it that way, but God, my mic is just acting up. At first it was the internet, now it's my mic. Game six, Jaylen Brown just in general has really stepped up his game in the last little bit. Back and forth they went in game six. Double overtime. Dude, Smart's hitting threes like crazy now to the point where he's everywhere. Defensively, rebounding on the floor, on the fast break, hitting threes. But sometimes he was like triple double, right? That's what he was like. But his confidence now was so huge. Marshall, he'd throw up some threes. You're like, dude, don't take that three. What the hell are you doing, Smart? That wasn't quote unquote Smart. But Toronto, really, I mean, Lowry was hitting threes. Van Fleet was hitting threes in game six. Back and forth, double overtime, just a fun ass game there. That was one of the most entertaining games I thought of the of the playoffs so far. Big, just fun game, back and forth. OG, obviously, with not much time, hit that three to take it out, and that was fun. Now, game seven, that, you know, Boston, to me, looked pretty good coming out of the gate. They got, like, an eight-point lead, but, of course, Toronto made that run. I think it was a 15-2 run. And game seven, Marshall, was so back and forth. Boston was up 50-46 at half. But, you know, the lead changes, the ties. I mean, there was just a ton of that. It was such a fun game to watch. And it seemed like, you know, Boston would get up by 8 or 10. And then, boom, Van Fleet would hit a bunch of threes. He hit, you know, four or five of them in that game. And you know, it's just back and forth. Back and forth, man, all the way down the stretch. Points off turnovers, 16 turnovers deep into the fourth quarter for Toronto, 28-14. I thought that was a key, but there, even look at this in my notes, I had it 88-78, 4:30 mark. Right away, they come back and have a nice little run to make it a good, you know, a good back and forth game. Lowry fouled out late, that hurt him. Tatum came up with the rebound, only missed one of them. With, I think, like 7.9 seconds left, if my notes are correct. Williams for Boston missed two free throws. That was huge. That kept him around. A huge block by a Smart once again. What'd you think of the way that closed? And then we'll, get into this this series with, Miami and Boston. They had some difficulties, but their star, Toronto, the star that was supposed to take over, wow, I mean, in the series, 15 points, 38% from the field, and this is really bad here, 12.5 from three for Pascal Siakam. That was rough, dude, and they really needed him. I mean, if you really can look at the NBA history and three-point history, I mean, this is one of the worst performances from three ever. that's not good. Obviously, I could understand they lost two key pieces, really, with Parker. He was a nice piece, too. But we know the big piece was Kawhi. But fun series, though, in a back-and-forth game. Both those games were phenomenal. That double overtime, man, that was fun as hell.
Yeah, and I don't know, Van Fleet, man, in game six, he almost shot his team out of a chance to win. Even that desperation shot at the end. I think that Van Fleet was trying to be like Klay Thompson, because he, I don't know, just from, again, what I saw at the end of game six, which they did end up winning, but even game seven, that dude was shooting shots from Steph Curry range, and he ain't Steph Curry. So he wasn't able to quite bring his matchup or his magic back from last year. And as you mentioned, threes, and that's why I kind of mentioned the about game seven with Jazz and Nuggets. I really think, like, this whole game seven stuff is coming down to legs, because if you look at game seven for Boston, Toronto, Toronto was 8 of 28 for three, which is not good for the NBA. And then Boston was 9 of 38. So it just, I think it goes to show that yes, the bubble has been, like, you know, limiting travel, or sorry, no travel. But I do think that these guys are, again, given full effort, and there is still that, like, oh shit, we're getting tired time, you know. And that's what the numbers indicate. But again, Boston just had a little more of wiser, just ball decisions coming down to the end of the game. And again, I know you can always nitpick refs, but I didn't see the angle of it, but apparently people said that when Kemba Walker went in for that game winning layup in game six, he got the hack a shack put on him, and they missed it. So, you know, who knows if that happens. But overall,
yeah, they did. They you know how they do that? They come out and admit it. They did that.
Yeah. So again, now Toronto won, and again, you can always nitpick and go back and forth. But my main takeaway from a roundabout way of saying this is that when there were clutch moments needed, Boston was putting up better shots overall as a team and making smarter decisions than Van Fleet trying to shoot out of his mind, or just making better choices as a team for Toronto. And I think you got to give a little shot there, Nurse, too. Like, this guy was Coach of the Year. But from what I saw, you weren't calling up the plays that, you know, you need for your team to be productive, and Kyle Lowry kind of saved your butt. But credit to Boston. You know, they had their little mental slip up, to like game three slip out their hands. That could have maybe been a sweep, but they got the job done. And now they walk into a team who I would, you know, compared to the Heat or sorry, I'm thinking LeBron. Yeah, compared to the Lakers. And they're playing, I would say, the best team from the bubble. The out of everyone who's played basketball so far in the bubble, the Heat have been the best playoff team. Now, they're maybe not, they wouldn't be a favorite in the Western, or sorry, they wouldn't be a favorite against Lakers or Clippers, but for a team who's been playing the most solid basketball, it's got to be Miami. And now you get into a fun matchup where I personally think that the Heat are the deepest team left in the NBA, I would say, for skill level. But you got you got Butler. Dragic has been playing out of his mind. You have Kendrick Nunn, who's a great player that really barely heard his name mentioned. Jay Crowder. I mean, the Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo. I mean, this team is not going to just like run out of like potential ways to score. A guy can have an off night and they can still win. And Butler's actually had a couple of those, Chris, where Butler scored, I think it was 13 or 15 points in the game, and they won. Like, this is a team that just finds different ways to win, and you could probably say has the best coach left in the playoffs. Like, Spoelstra out-coached Budenholzer, and everyone loves Budenholzer. And I know everyone loves Stevens, but if you want to compare just longevity and coaching prowess, I think Spoelstra gets the advantage here, and I would favor him over Doc, whatever, that's a debate. But yeah.
Yeah, so at least the Doc wants a debate.
Sure, it's a debate, yeah. But, okay, so you have a deeper team than Boston, I would say, a more experienced head coach. And for a true alpha, you know, I would take Butler over Tatum. And, again, that's maybe up for debate too. But so there's nothing I would think
like that Miami's lacking. Like on the court and in a fight, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't think Miami's lacking anything. Maybe the time off hurt them a little bit. Normally, you don't be time to maybe spend with your family. Instead, they've just been chilling as a team, probably playing video games in the bubble. But from the Miami Heat standpoint, you have a big who's super athletic. You have an alpha guy, and you have a good point guard. Now, Boston has some great guards. Tatum's their alpha. But one matchup
Kemba's pretty close to being their alpha too, because he'll have the ball in his hand walking down the court. You know what I mean?
You're right. So you're going between. You're right, and he's just kind of a quieter dude. Yeah. So Kemba and Tatum. Okay. But I guess one matchup I'm really curious about is the fact that the Celtics center Theis really, again, he's not a guy who needs to score. He just kind of chills on the court,
right?
Plays his defense, knows his role, and that's what he does. But if you're looking at matchups, and I don't think Boston really has a big that can stop him, he now has to guard Bam Adebayo. So just, I know we don't need to get super X's and O's here, but this is one that does jump out to me because no one else on Boston's tall enough to guard him. You sure as hell wouldn't put Tatum on Adebayo because that just wouldn't make sense for foul trouble and whatnot.
Yeah, but true.
You basically have a role player center who against Philly just worried about playing defense and now is, again, versus Toronto, I guess you put him on Gasol or Toronto's different bigs and, again, just got rebounds and played tough. Now he has to guard one of the most athletic bigs in the league. So I'll be really curious to see how game one goes because you really can't have – Theis now just can't be a guy who just kind of chills and gets rebounds. You now have to guard Adebayo, right, and you have to have a presence because Adebayo can go for the rim. Jimmy Butler's going to attack the rim. I think if you're a Celtics fan, you know that Tatum's going to produce points. Like, I don't think that Tatum's going to get shut down by the Heat. And Kemba's going to get his own too. But how does the front court play out? Because the one thing that jumped out to me, and I'll throw it back to you, Chris, is that when I did watch Boston versus Philly, I truly realized like how small of a team Boston is. Now, again, they've had a great record. They're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like what the hell's wrong with you? You know, like, they're a small team, but they really don't have much muscle. And
they have length, but yeah, you're right. They don't have.
Your one true big is literally a role player who plays defense. So now Miami's got, you know, Iguodala, Crowder, Adebayo, Butler. Like, do you think size alone, obviously, how much of an advantage do you think that is towards the Heat with what I said about Adebayo and maybe the Heat being a more physical team compared to the Celtics.
Yeah, it's interesting. I forgot to mention this stat in general. The Celtics won Game 7 despite not making a field goal in the final 5 minutes and 20 seconds of regulation. That's pretty crazy, I'd say. I think it's a worthy point. I do. And also, you know, they're already spreading the floor. They could work that two-man game down low with Jimmy. Jimmy driving in addition to all these shooters, or playing, you know, feeding the post to where they can actually either, you know, like you said, add up fouls on some guys they didn't want to have to put on them, or just make it an easier game that way. And he can pass out of that a little bit too. You wonder if Hayward's going to come back. Not that that adds depth for their bench, but I think that is something to think about. And they like to drive to the rack. And if you don't have guys that can protect, that catches up too. Some more things, obviously the three-point shooting. the depth, Miami, yes. Three-point shooting, yes. Getting to the rack, driving hard for the whole season, statistically, yes, that does favor Miami. Whereas I think Boston has the talent to get to the rack, obviously with you know, Kemba and other folks too, but they haven't done it consistently. So the thing is about the three-point shooting, though, the Celtics actually have done pretty damn well as far as, you know, opponents allowing three-point shots, 34%, which is, you know, near the bottom of that. Obviously, we know Miami, you know, is the best three-point shooting team left right now, hands down. So, you know, that bodes well to be able to, you know, make up a couple extra strides to get out to the three when you're used to being able to do that. But like I said, if you look at the free throw, you know, getting to the line a lot, that does hurt you. In Miami, I mean, Butler can get to the rack all day long. And fouls, like Miami really doesn't foul a lot, dude. And so if you're constantly getting to the rack and getting fouls or easy buckets or being able to dish it out to the three, but you're not creating fouls to a team that doesn't drive a ton already, it looks like they may up that in this series. But, you know, now here's something funny. Without Butler in the bubble when they played, Miami did beat them. Boston did survive giving up 31 free throw attempts in January, but they got beat in the bubble when they went to the Heat went to the line 39 times. And that's a lot. And, you know, 18 was the big you're talking about. So I think it's a really good point to bring up. And Hayward, like I said, would add depth. Boston, higher end talent, like you said, but I don't know, man. It kind of – one thing I'll say just for a cheap shot at Kyrie, the Boston's way better – much – I'm not going to say way better, but clearly better without Kyrie, because now you have Tatum and Walker. You still have Walker, but Tatum can really take over as that alpha. So that's what makes it such a great matchup, dude.
Yeah, and obviously I would assume, again, I didn't watch when they played earlier, but I'm assuming you're putting Jimmy Butler on Tatum to lock down. So when it comes to crunch time and you need a defensive stop, you know, Tatum's going to man up. Like, he's got to prove himself. Everyone loves the kid. You never hear much bashing on him. So when it comes to late game shots, which I'm sure they'll need, you know, is Tatum going to be able to, you know, get past Butler? Like, you know, if I thought the Heat did a wonderful job of containing Antetokounmpo when he was playing. So maybe the goal for the Heat this round now is to slow down Tatum. And I don't think Tatum's quite as versatile as the Greek Freak. Obviously, he shoots the three much better. But I think you put Butler on him. And I think you have a very, very fun, crafty matchup of Kemba Walker and Goran Dragic. Like, obviously two guys who are probably going to get their points, but those will be fun. I'm guessing they match up against each other. And then you have, you know, it's kind of like Jaylen Brown against like Heron Robinson. So I think on paper, Chris, it really is a fun guard-oriented matchup. And again, maybe Stevens finds a way to do something on defense, because those the free throw numbers you read, if that plays out for a full series, it's going to be massively hard for Boston to win. Like, you can have one game where you give up, you know, 31 free throw attempts and have the other team get you in foul trouble. But in a best out of seven, it'd be really hard for the Celtics. They'd have to shoot lights out almost every game from three. If you're going to be massively in foul trouble and getting out rebounding and getting the line less, it really makes it difficult, because the skill differential isn't that much of a difference to for them to pull off an upset. So, yeah, maybe the approach they take on Adebayo and stuff. But I guess as I've kind of gotten in a little bit of a circle, Boston really doesn't play other bigs. Like, if you look at their bench players, there's Grant Williams, Rob Williams III. Like, they don't really have the size. So maybe do you have the approach of trying to run and gun with Miami? Like, I guess maybe play a little more of an up-tempo game if you're the Celtics on offense?
Well, yeah, maybe. But here's another level to this. The Celtics' biggest defensive weakness during the regular season was their tendency to foul. They ranked 24th in terms of opponent free throws attempts.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I just saw this stat. I'm like, golly. Well, the beauty of it, I think that they can play. I think both teams can play either way, half court, or they have the tools, the shooters, yada, 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 to play both. Both teams are awesome in transition, and both, I feel like, are pretty damn good at setting the tone on a half court, you know what I mean? So, I don't know, man. I think it's just me still, because remember last time, well, this is probably two shows ago, when I kept saying, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm picking the Heat, and you picked them too, over Milwaukee. And it just keeps sticking with me, where I'm like, am I going to pick the Heat over freaking Boston now too? And how much of a slap in the face to the Philly fans and the Timberwolves fans if he goes to the finals with a pretty, you know, healthy East here. I mean, let's not be honest. Let's be honest, you know. And they've been running people off the, like, 9-1. Like, I don't know, dude. I'm almost going to pull the trigger, but I'm going to bail out and make you do the prediction first. Sorry.
No, I'll gladly keep going for Miami. I do just think that I think I'll be curious to watch the first couple of games, and when we come back on Monday, we'll break it down. Is how does Boston handle the bigs? Because if Theis was, you know, even like half an Embiid, I'd say Boston's got to be favored in the series. But that foul issue of not having bigs and Adebayo, and honestly, that it always blows my mind watching him play, because I've never seen a big shoot. The guy has a green light every time. He never gets yelled at by Spoelstra, and he'll freaking dribble like he's a point guard and pull up for like these 20 footers. And I'm amazed at the way he plays, because not many people his size play with no red lights. But I think that's the matchup that spins it. And I will take Jimmy Buckets and my reinvented Goran Dragic. The dude hasn't aged a damn day since he was the point guard behind Steve Nash. So I'll take the Heat to win, and I'll take the Heat in.
If you could take him in three, would you? If it was possible? No, I'm just kidding.
I'll take Heat in five. Heat in five.
Wow. I like this guy's got balls over here. I like it. I think it's going to be wrong, but I do like it. No matter who wins, I see six or seven. I'm going to go seven with the Celtics. Celtics get it done in seven. But I'll tell you what. I just don't want to hear all that crying. Because let's be honest, I mean, Miami's going to have their hand full with that offense too. I mean, I think that's fair enough too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Built like the best team in the league or anything like that. They're overachieving, you know what I mean, as well.
Yeah, the one defense note to wrap up on this is that I think Miami plays probably the best help defense in the NBA. Like, just – there were so many times in both series where, whether it was the Bucks on a fast break or the Pacers even, and the way they recover, and again, I give credit to Pat Riley and Spoelstra for, you got to put the right people in there, but their defensive IQ, and again, I'm not saying the Boston Celtics aren't a smart team, but you can't really teach defensive recovery in a fast break drill. But you almost never see Miami, where if a team beats them down the court, the way they recover and talk is, I would say, the best I've seen, even out of Lakers and Clippers. Like, the effort they put in recovery is something that will help them, because you're right, Boston's going to jack a ton of threes. They're going to want to get down there and jack them up, and they can hit them too. But I just think that the team defense of Miami is the reason why they're at where they are, where they're 8-1, because not every team recovers quite like they do. So, again, it'll be a fun coaching matchup. Again, we said it from the last series. Budenholzer didn't change how Miami played. He kept to his guns, and it got him kicked out in five. You know, I think Spoelstra and Stevens are both smart enough to say, hey, this is how game one went, Chris. Let's make an adjustment for game two and game three and game four. Like, we can probably talk about teams making changes from these coaches and not just saying, hey, this is what got us here, guys. Screw it. We're going to stick with it.
Yeah, and real quick, some stats from the Lakers. Last two series, LeBron James and Anthony Davis have combined for 542 points, 212 rebounds, 129 assists in their first 10 playoff games together. The only other duo in history to eclipse those numbers through 10 games is Oscar Robertson and Jack, Tymon, and then Baylor and West. If you just look at what Bronny's been doing, he joined Oscar Robertson as the only player in the NBA playoffs to history to record 250 points, 100 rebounds, 10 assists in the first 10 playoff games. But, you know, the problem with him is he's getting old, dude. He's just old. He's not clutch, and he's too old. That's the problem with LeBron. Let's kind of mix it together, and then we'll shut this thing down. Houston and the Bucks both kicked out. We did. I'm not sure if this is a recent photo of Harden at a bar. I don't believe it is, to be honest with you, because I think it would have spread way more. I think it was from the last couple of years. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong about that, because he had this big smile in it, which doesn't surprise me there. Off-season decisions for Houston. D'Antonio's already opted out. He is not returning. Small ball is over, except they've made some trades last year that kind of puts them behind the eight ball. And also the Bucks, you know, Giannis sitting there in free agency, you wonder what's going to happen there.
For you know, small ball being over, maybe for their coach and for D'Antoni's style, but the way their roster's constructed, like, you really can't switch it up much. So, I mean, obviously, I think a lot of coaches would love that job. Hell, that you're taking in a very talented offensive team that, to give them credit, they didn't have, like, a shit year. Like, you know, Houston was a top 7-8 team in the NBA. So, you know, you're inheriting a good job. It's just you have a guy in Westbrook and Harden and a bunch of athletic kind of mini bigs, and what do you do? So I think someone will take that. I think it'd be dumb to pass that job up. But if you want to bring in your own style and be like a freaking Thibodeau, who's all in on defense, like, you know, obviously a guy like Thibodeau would never, I know he's at the Knicks, but a guy with his mentality would never mesh for that team, because you'd be, you'd just be, you know, pulling your hair out, because it's not how they're constructed. So I think that obviously it'll be a fun team to take over. Some things you can't change, but the promising talent you're walking into is still really damn good. Maybe you could maybe try to make a trade for a big or something to get a little more hype back in there. But I'd say the stock, you could be the head coach of much worse teams in the NBA. And for the Greek Freak, you know, do we see it to where do we keep a guy like him in a smaller market, or does he jump ship? You know, to give the NBA credit, they've tried to do all they can to make it to where contracts are more attractive to players who can stay in their hometown. But obviously it failed with Durant, you know, and you have the teams, the buddy up system with Kawhi and Paul George. Like, I think the NBA is doing all they can to keep small market teams relevant, because it's great for the revenue, great for competitive balance, and great for your sport. But you know, he's now had a couple of early exits, and I'm sure part of him is thinking, well, shit, you know, they're paying Chris Middleton all these Buco bucks, and he's not a true number two. Maybe I need to go join a new team. So it's probably a 50-50 deal, Chris, because, you know, is Milwaukee going to be able to bring in pieces that they need? And, you know, we don't know the answer, but a lot of it has to be in how much does the Greek Freak value Middleton? Because if he doesn't truly think Middleton's a true number two that's getting paid for it, he's probably jumping ship. Like, if he doesn't think Middleton can be a Clay or Steph or Paul George or an Anthony Davis or whatever your top number twos are in the league, if he doesn't view him that way, then he, for the sake of his own longevity career, he probably needs to find a new place to go to.
And money-wise, too, because he took it up like he's the number two, you know? That's the money. Mm-hmm. That contract's the real deal. So, and he's a damn good player. And he's basically overachieved probably as a pro. You know what I mean? So this is not ripping him. It's just, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we have a very fun game seven. Again, if you're going to bet it, don't be betting the overs in the second half. Okay. We've had two game sevens now. And in both of the games, either the legs were dead tired or they both couldn't shoot for crap. And I'd like to lean towards the fact that Boston and Toronto didn't forget how to shoot threes. They're just legs are tired. So look to maybe bet the under at halftime if you can do the live betting. Look at taking the under in the second half. And, man, if Murray puts on another exhibition, that'd be kind of fun. Like, you kind of can't help but love there's so much athletic ability on that team. I just don't know if they can get past Kawhi. So until then, mask up. Sign up to vote because we're getting close to voting for a new president. hopefully a new president. So until then, have a safe time with your family. Enjoy basketball this week. The boys are out tonight. Peace.